By way of introduction, I think my first encounter with Carl Krieger was outside of a hotel in Lake of the Ozarks where smoke was coming out of his mouth. And it was because we wouldn't let him smoke inside. And isn't that true?
Oh, okay.
And getting to talk to him, I discovered that he's one of our foremost and at the helm of our pastorate to those who grow grapes and make wine. And I thought this would certainly be a person that you'd all want to hear from, since wine plays such an important role in the Old and the New Testament. So without further ado, Carl, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to Herman, Missouri, of all places. What can I say?
I'm originally from Shawnee, Wisconsin, and I think most of you pastors heard of Shawnee. We, at one time, had one of the largest congregations in the Missouri Synod with over 4,000 souls. I was born and raised on a farm, and I farmed for a good many years, and I decided to go into politics and to run for sheriff, and I was elected. And I served 16 years as a law enforcement man. And what I did is when I was up for re-election, I didn't run again because I knew I was going to get beat, so I could turn around and tell people that I never lost an election. And then I managed a farm co-op. And at St. James, I was quite active in the church. And the wife and I both went to be Bethel Bible teachers. And after I was through with that two-year series, the principal of the school, Mr. Kleinschmidt, said, Carl, why don't you go into the ministry? I was 54 years old. So I went then to the lay program in Mequon, and I graduated at 58. And you are placed on your first placement. And I'll never forget Dr. Natsky sitting there with his little beard rubbing it, and there was about four openings, and he said, with the name of Carl Ludwig Krieger, we're going to send you to Herman. And when I got to Herman, I found out why. It is a German community. And I do speak some low German, and I fit real good. I know a little high German, a little low German, and half English, so they call that Herman German, so I'm in.
Aha. Okay, so you came right out of the Lay Institute, and your first placement was to Herman, Missouri.
Herman, Missouri.
And what did they want you to do there?
There were a group of people in Herman wanted to start a Lutheran church, and they did. So what they did is they started the church, and they even bought some property. And they, from what I was told, were served by the pastors in the circuit as a preaching station. And then I feel that maybe Reverend Lang could probably knows more about this than I do, but they decided then to make it a mission church. And they sent a person starting as a mission church. So I became their first full-time pastor.
Okay, tell us a little bit about Herman so that we get some background about where this work is taking place. What kind of a community is that? You said it was German, but what kind of churches are there? What industry there? Is it growing with population? Is it declining? What's Herman?
I think the reason why the mission went into this is because the survey showed that there were approximately, 36 to 38% of the people are non-church. And there is an active UCC church, Catholic church, Methodist church, and a Baptist church with two Pentecostals. And I was told by the president of the church after I was there a while that they were just curious whether they could build a church in the middle of that circumstances.
Now, just clarify, were there two Pentecostal churches or two Pentecostals in the Baptist church?
Two Pentecostal churches.
Okay.
They're small. So, and that was it, basically, and it was a challenge, and it worked.
Okay, now, is this what we would normally consider, your rural farm problem, economic decline?
It's farm, small community. Herman is the town of 2,800. And we cover an area of, 10 miles around Herman that that you cover. In fact, we have some members now that are coming as high as 18, 20 miles.
Okay, so they put you in Herman and said, we've got this little congregation and we think we're going to get a church here, and the statistics show we've got, what, 38% unchurched? Now, what did you do?
Well, what we did is, first of all, when I came down there, I kind of looked the country over, and I found strictly a farm, and with my farm background. So the first thing I did is I walked into the old farm restaurant. Not, they have several restaurants, but this one is the largest one, and it's got holes in the carpeting, and where most of the farmers and the common people hang out. And when I walked into that place, I was not dressed. I had a sports shirt on and jeans, and I introduced myself, and I said, I'm Carl Krieger from the Lutheran Church here at Herman. And you could hear a pin drop. I found out after a while, I'm the first pastor that ever walked into that restaurant in 10 years. And in order, and I might as well bring this in order to break the ice, I stood there, it was kind of embarrassing, and I said, I understand you people have good fishing down in this country, and I said, so do we, up in northern Wisconsin. I said, the largest fish I ever caught weighed 42 pounds, and he was that big. This one guy grunted a little bit. He said, what do you mean that big? I said, that was between the eyes. He was too long this way. Well, the same fellow bought me a cup of coffee, and from there on it went. And I've been told up to this date now, after 3.5 years, I have the best fishing story at the restaurant at this point. But what I did is I got among the people. And another thing that I did is everybody owns a pickup truck. So I needed another car, so I bought a pickup truck, and I bought a red one. Now, you got to remember, I'm a politician. It's red. And as I drove down the street, I waved at everybody. Some of them almost run in the ditch because they had no idea what it is. But right now, if Adolf Hitler was living, he could get in my red truck and everybody wave at him as he drove down the road. They all know who I am. Identification.
Now, what kind of an image were you trying to create in terms of your representation of the church and the gospel that it represented?
Well, I'm going to put it this way here. What I tried to do is I went to the people. Of course, Sundays and on occasions, or like when I go to the hospital, in the restrooms, I go in dressed, suit, tie. But most of the time, I'm among the people with jeans, and I'm not too well liked by the pastoral conference that we have there, because of the fact that they are always dressed in that little town. I've never seen Reverend Elliot from the UCC Church without a white shirt or tie. And I think after about 3 months, one of the greatest compliments that I had is two gentlemen were sitting there. In fact, they both are members now of my church. We were sitting having a cup of coffee, and one leaned over and said, you know, Pastor, you're the first minister I ever run into I felt I could sit down and talk to. So I met them at their level. Well, after we got going, we developed a telephone survey. It was a concoction that I had in school. And for the simple reason why I came up with this, at school, we had to take church surveys. So we went into a given area, and we had a bulletin of the church, of the Lutheran church, and we knocked on the door, and we said that we're from such and such a Lutheran church. We're having a church survey. Do you belong to a church? You bet they did. And I said to Professor Natsky, I said, the next one we do, let's go in an area where we know it's dominant, mostly Catholic. And we went to a small town or a suburb with St. Mary's Church. And we added one more question, that if they belong to a church, we said, who is your pastor? And we found that about 40% said it was Pastor so-and-so, but they belonged to St. Mary's. What did that tell you? It would have been Father. The Catholic says it's Father so-and-so, not Pastor. and these people were non-church. Because if talking to one family, which I personally did, and I told him, I said, hey, buddy, you don't belong to the Catholic Church, but I said, for information. And he said that if the Pentecostals come into your house and preach to you for 2 hours, and then 2 weeks later, the Jehovah's Witness comes and preaches to you in your house when you tell them you're non-church, he says, ever since that, he says, we belong to a church. So we all have this hand up. In fact, Reverend Lang requested a copy of this here. I don't know what they all use it for, but I presented this once before. This is so simple, people, that half the people don't want to even try it. It is self-explanatory. What you do is, first of all, how many people can you get to knock on doors to take a survey? Secondly, you're approaching the people and they're going to lie to you. Now, on the phone, they are not threatened. We had 14 people in our congregation. We called on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night between 5 and 9. The reason you do on Tuesday night is due to the fact, for some unknown reason, I found this when I was in politics, most of your people are gone on Monday night. And you asked, what we did is we took the telephone book, and these 14 people called 1,300 homes, families, now this is, in 3 nights. How many people would that take to cover that door to door, plus the time? What we did is we had took the telephone book, and each family was given anywhere from 150 to 200 names. And what we did is we had three questions. The first question was, we identified ourselves. We said, this is the Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church here in Hermann. Now we were telling everybody that answered that phone that we are here. Identification. Number two, we said, do you belong to a church? And the first guy I called, he says, hell no. I said, thank you. But he didn't know that I had the telephone book there. We had it all photostated. I had his name, his address, and his telephone number. And we had two sheets there. One sheet was headed non-church. The other one said inactive. The next person, the next question you asked, if they answered yes, they did belong to a church, the next question you asked, which church do you belong? And if they said the Catholic Church, UCC Church, we had these listed and we made a marker. The third question was the loaded question. We said, do you go to church more than once a month? And that seemed, we more or less lucked out on that. That seems to be the charming time, 1 month. They either said we go all the time, most of the time, or we very seldom go, or we haven't been in church for a couple of years. Those that said we very seldom go or haven't went for a period of time, we put them on the other sheet as inactives, but behind their name we wrote what church they belong to. What this gave us when this was over with, we tallied the churches, the families that belong to the church. We took the inactives and with the names and segregated those. And for an example, I think if I recall, I don't believe I have it on here. If I recall that the UCC Church had something like around 340 families with 160 families inactive. The Methodist Church only had 16 inactive. The Catholic Church had about 25% inactive. The Baptist Church only had 2. What it did is it told us who our strong churches were and who our weaker churches were. You all have a copy of this. It's quite self-explanatory. What this did, when it was all over with, this gave us a list of 386 families that we knew were not involved in church. We weren't spinning our wheels.
or I like, and I think I even put it in here, pastoring people that belong, are good members of another denomination. But what it done is gave us a list of people that we knew that when we contacted them, they were not church members.
Okay, I want to raise this question. Given what you hear so often about the cohesiveness and the kind of ingrown nature of a rural community and a town of that size, okay, what was the risk that you were running that everybody else in the town was going to have a bad feeling that you were going to come in and steal their sheep?
I didn't really care, just to put it very bluntly. I look at this way here, if anybody, my philosophy, and this was brought up at one of the pastoral conferences, you know, they didn't accuse me, but they said, you know, they brought up the word of stealing sheep. And I only answered that very bluntly. I said, I used to farm, and sheep will not jump the fence if they're satisfied in where the pasture that they have at home. And okay, they didn't bring it up anymore.
Well, now, one other question on the same issue. Do you think, hypothetically speaking, suppose this was, St. John's Evangelische Lutherische Kirche that had been there since 1865, and now that's a declining church, and you come in. Would the job have been more difficult or less difficult?
No, I. You're wondering where my strengths come from, where my members are coming from, or where you think my...
In other words, the question of identity, the church's identity, if there was no church there, and you come in, for instance, if St. John's...
wasn't
you know,
there.
Right. So
well,
you
no
come
problem.
In, there's nothing there, so there's
well,
that's
then,
better.
That'd be better yet.
Okay.
That'd be better yet, because you do the same... I would do the same thing as I did here. I would find out who is the non-church.
Okay, so what happened next? Now you got 385.
Well, then what we did,
prospects.
And of course, we sent these people a letter. And I'm going to stress this, and it's stressed very much in here. You have to remember, when this non-church gets a letter and it comes from a church, it's junk mail. Keep that in mind. What you do is, we had just one or two small paragraphs inviting them to church, one little quote from scripture, I don't remember what we used anymore in the first one, and it was signed by the church, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, not by the pastor or the elders. It was an invitation to come and see us. And what we did is, we did not stamp the envelopes with our church returned address, and we hand-ripped the envelopes, addressed them. Now, when this come in the mail, hey, here's a handwritten envelope, it had to be somebody personal. But when they opened it up, and then it was on church stationery, it was small enough that before they threw it away, they read it. We had one experience on this that, and I want to stress this very much, where I went to one of our joining churches and neighbor sister churches, and the thing about this telephone survey, the ladies' aid can do this. The youth club can do this under the direction or guidance of the pastor. And when I went into this church, the lady said, well, we know everybody in this town, and if there's 5-6 families that are non-churched, that's going to be it. Well, I said, girls, try it. And they did, and they came up with 91 families on their telephone that did not belong to a church. The pastor thought it was foolish to start out with, and when he found out there was 91 families, he took it away from the girls and wrote an 11-page sermon and sent it to these people. And the girls dropped it. And they, in fact, I got telephone calls. They were very... But this is another advantage in your church. Now, in a metropolitan area, I think this could be done if you have enough people to draw out, you know, the certain numbers, you know, that's in your area, covering an area. But this is beautiful in the country area. And this is it about, and with that first letter, we sent a brochure. You all have a brochure.
I gotta get that.
This brochure
fellow, because I believe in advertising. And if you notice, number one, what does it say? We welcome you. We give identification, and if you look into the in and on the back, it gives us our times of services. But the how meet is right here, the basic teaching of the Lutheran Church. Herman, being a tourist town, in 3 years, over 4,000 of these have left Herman. And we're getting letters from all over the United States where people just pick them up out of the racks and all of a sudden state. In fact, we have some people that even send like a check of $10 or $20, $25 to help promote this. One lady not too long ago sent a check of $25. We were Lutheran. We didn't see it until we got home and went through the brochures, and she thought it was neat.
Now, once you sent, so then you went out and you sent them this invitation. That gets them into the church.
No. Well, it does. It did some. What we did is we broke the ice, let them know that we were there. Then we waited until we did this the first part of the year, and then before Holy Week, we sent another letter, another mailing, with just putting the Holy Week services down with this invitation. We did get some response. I'd say about 5-6 families came. Then what we did is, in the spring, we had 4 families that went out, and just in Herman we experimented. And they each took 10 families for one evening. Now you may think this is crazy, 10 families for one evening to see. But what we did something different. They went and knocked on the door. Everybody knows everybody in Herman. They introduced themselves as the members of the Shepherd of the Hills Church. They gave them another brochure, and they invited them to church and says, we'd like to have you come up and visit us once. And if you'd like to, we'll stop and pick you up. And they left. We drove those people nuts. The next day, all you heard around Herman, they said, well, what kind of church is that? They aren't jamming their religion down our throat. And that curiosity brought in more people than you'll want to believe. I'm going to make this comment. I don't believe in the Biesenthal and Kennedy program anymore. And I'm going to tell you why at this particular point. When the Pentecostals and the Jehovah Witnesses come into these houses and preach, when we walk in with that program, we're doing the same thing that they're doing. It used its purpose, because I was involved with it up home a lot. It served its purpose, but after you got into the 70s, it don't work anymore.
Now you're saying that those particular methods are worn out, they're passé,
They're worn out. They don't fit today's population.
You remind me of a story I heard from the south side of St. Louis. It seems that it was a group doing this kind of calling, and it was a summer's day, and they knocked on the door, identified themselves as from the Lutheran Church, and the person inside the house came to the door, and when he heard Lutheran Church, he started cursing and swearing, using obscene language and everything else. It went on for about 5 minutes, and they were standing there, and they said, what will you say now? You know, like, if you die tomorrow, what God, what do I say? So they said, when the whole thing was over, they said to the fellow, well, okay, go to hell. And he said, what? He said, well, okay, go to hell. And he said, would you come in, please?
I'm not saying it doesn't work 100%, but basically, in our community there, and talking now to people that have joined a church, that have been out of church for a period of time, it irritates these people when you're coming in and preaching to them in their living room.
Okay, so you overcame, what was the weakness, let's say, of a lot of high-powered programs. Now, somewhere along the line, they have got to hear about Jesus Christ. Where did that happen?
I found that every one of those people that I have contacted and that the group has contacted, and we've seen, I'm going to say, 85% of those non-churched in the period of 3 years. I have not run into one that was not baptized or belong to some other church at one time. They left their respective church for some reason.
We had one family that, one of the first families that came in when, they got their second letter. The lady called me and asked if I'd stop out to the house. She wanted to talk to me, and they were UCC. They had left the church 8 years ago, and they said they waited for 3 years for somebody to come over and to see him, ask him why they wasn't coming to church. But nobody showed up. And we were the first people in 8 years that were concerned about their spiritual welfare. And I'm finding now, you know, I'm one of these guys, I think like, oh, Lord, give me patience, but I need it right now, you know. I'm finding people that we contacted 2 years ago, all of a sudden now, this is starting to come. It's slow. And as they're coming, they're just, and of course, what works with that is you have to have your congregation has to be warm, welcoming to people. Hope and pray the Holy Spirit gives you one of the best sermons you ever gave on that particular Sunday when they're there, and they start coming back.
Okay, now let's get some history of Shepherd of the Hills then. When was the church actually started, and how has this been going? What kind of a program do you have now? These people, I take it, finally ended up inside the building.
Well, I think it was in 1982 they started a church, and they met, and then in 1983 they bought some property, a house with approximately 3 acres of land, I believe, and it's just out in the country. And I was called in on December of 1984, and then we chartered, I believe, that following summer, became a chartered church, and we had 22 people, if I recall, involved in the church when I first came.
So basically you got there then in December of 84?
84. Okay. I was installed December the 2nd, in 1984.
Okay, and since then what's happened?
Well, we have involved in the church, these are not all members, but people that are coming, and we have now quite a group that are coming for a period of time that haven't indicated. Now, we're not pushing them to join. We have 117 people involved now. In our first quarter, or in our first April meeting, according to our treasurer, we are averaging 62 per Sunday.
And what was it when you got there in December?
I think if we had 8, 10 of them, we'd be lucky.
So from eight or 10 to 62 at the present moment.
We went to two services about a year and a half ago. And we use the philosophy, when you start getting 3/4 full, see, we can seat approximately 35, 40 people tight.
Now, what kind of identity then has developed in terms of the message of the gospel that the Lutheran Church represents in Herman?
Right here.
You know, okay, so basically you've stuck to that particular basic teaching. Do they see the Lutheran Church as one of several? Do they see it as a unique entity in Herman as opposed to the UCC, you know? And
I think by reading this, and I've got comments on this here from people now, you know, this after a period of time that have read it, people have read this and they belong to one of the, shall I say, like the UCC church, the more loose church. They're not too sound on their doctrine and so on and so forth. So after they read this here and they thought, hey, you know, that's basic. And this one gentleman was a little older, and he said, that's the way it used to be in the UCC church. But he says it isn't that way, so he's there now, a member of our church.
So the identity is one of evangelical Lutheran Christianity, Lutheran Christianity. Okay. Do you have any closing remarks before we throw it open for questions?
No, I got a few more things here. Another thing that we...
Think you'd disappoint me.
I didn't think... Okay, I had to make a few notes here because, you know, I got a little nervous. You know, your hands get wet.
They said Nixon's hands got wet, too.
Yeah. Another thing that we've did is that I'm an advocate of is advertisement, not only brochures. You made a remark last night, I don't know how it had it fitting. In our news, in our information in the paper, we are the Church of the Lutheran Hour. Because we find that as you got around, a lot of these people were hearing the Lutheran Hour. And as soon as, and I didn't catch on to that until the one guy said, well, are you the Church of the Lutheran Hour? You know, this old German. And I said, we sure are. And I said, that's over right now. You better let the people know we are the Church of the Lutheran Hour. And you'll be surprised how many of these people hear that, hear the Lutheran Hour. And why not use the identity? And I think the comment was made last night, or somebody did, and said, hey, look at for years how well it was known. In fact, it was the greatest thing on the air. Another thing, I'm involved in the hospital. I volunteered to be the chaplain. This may sound crazy, but when they have outsiders come in on an accident, or a non-church comes in that is seriously ill, I am called. The reason I volunteered, it gives me an opportunity to see the computer sheet of all the non-church that come into that hospital. The other pastors do not see it. So I go to the hospital every Tuesday afternoon and every Friday, and I see all the non-church, and of course my best excuse is I see all the Lutherans that come in. You know, they come from all around the different areas. And when better can you give comfort and minister a little and have a prayer with someone that hasn't been in church for 8-10 years when they're laying on their back looking up? And it amazes me, the first thing they'll say is, why is God doing this to me? I would love to say, what have you done for God in the last 10 years, but you don't dare. We have received members through this hospital visitation, and I'm going to make this comment because we have received 3 different thank you cards, and one not too long ago. I should have brought it along. A lady was a former Baptist, was in the hospital almost a month. I'd see her twice a week, and she sent a real good thank you card, and she says, Pastor, I forgot how to pray until you come to see me, and I want to thank you. I'm back to my church again. And I feel, as a servant of the Lord, oh, we'd like to have them all join our church, but we did our job. And I'm also chaplain of the fire department, in case there's a serious situation, you're called out. And besides, I got another little badge, you know. Then also, this is big print material that is available from the Lutheran Braille and Sight Saving. Rest homes, people. This is the Lutheran Hour. Comes 2 weeks late. We are the only church that are supplying 3 rest homes with biblical reading material. There's also one laying up in the hospital. I put one in the hospital waiting room. I've got received letters of that. To think that this lady wrote and said that they had a car accident, their son was hurt quite bad, and how comforted it was she could pick something up outside of a True Love magazine in the hospital at 2:00 in the morning to give her some comfort. Doesn't cost you a dime. Also, they make a hymn of the 50 favorite hymns. And if you notice, they're all stamped Shepherd of the Hills. And you should see those hymnals. All the churches use them. But, you know, I just, in case it page tears out, you've got to have Shepherd of the Hills. Somebody got to have identification. And by doing this, people come into this rest home, and they find that the Lutheran Church there in Herman are the only church that's concerned about Grandma, because they bring some stuff that Grandma can read for the church. And all of a sudden, you got family coming and talking to you. And some of these families are non-church. Another. And of course, the first thing they said, how come you got the stamp Shepherd of the Lutheran Hills? And I said, hey, if your mother was in here, you surely wouldn't want her to have anything from Jehovah's Witness, would you? And I said, now they know it's a standard, you know, it's a mainline church. And
I'm going to have to cut you off because we're going to run out of time, and I'm going to have to break for a commercial. I do want to give it a chance for some questions. I'm sure you've got more that we can do in the quiet visitation time and things like that. What I'm impressed with is I think that there are some things which are uniquely relevant to the rural community. It would be very difficult, for example, in a hospital like Barnes Hospital, to do some of the kinds of ministry that you're doing there, simply because of the logistics of the city. Before we throw it over for questions, I just want to share with you a little idea that I had when I was pastoring at St. Peter's down here on King's Highway. I never brought it about, but I thought it would work. And there's a billboard just before the exit for King's Highway, and I wanted a sign on there that said, St. Peter's Lutheran Church, this exit, memberships available.
Yeah.
And I thought that would really work, but I never got it up there. So let's throw it open for questions. Any questions of Carl about the ministry in a rural area and how you can make a church grow there?
You mean to tell me I covered it that thoroughly?
Okay, back there.
Okay, I'll address it then. One of the reasons why it doesn't work in our rural area is because the people are very relationship oriented. Until they establish a relationship with you, or you establish one with them, then they're going to listen to what you say. And that's one of the things, the reasons why the vision call or kids program simply do not function well in our area. And the people that do not tend to be highly educated, for example, my congregation, which is Minnesota Carl, they had some materials on the letter, the Life in Christ. I said, well, let's send out this brochure. It was about, that brochure that had sent out. And three of the men who were there, who were the leading men of the church, they said, no, we can't do that. Because nobody will read that much information. That was just only a little brochure. Mm-hmm. They said, send one page, no more. And that's the way it is. They do not read much, and they do not listen to long discourses. And so you have to build on the relationship, and that's why, one of the reasons why those situations do not work. Also, one of the things that Carl has done is he has identified the people where they live, and they have become comfortable with him because he is on their level. If you send a seminary graduate into Herman, the mission would have bombed. Because the seminary graduates would not have been where the people are, and the people would not have identified with Carl and with the Lutheran congregation. And they can identify with Lutheranism because Lutheranism is where they live. He talked about he wears open shirt, but the Baptists wear a tie and sort of thing. And that's part of the mistake of his functioning in her. And that's very important. I think too often the pastors maybe even cultivate the business. They're very professional. And people sit there not comfortable with that, and they don't relate to us as human beings.
Now, your feeling is that the rural community is a different working ground simply because people are more history and relationship based. What impressed me when he started was I didn't know that he grew up on a farm. Okay, I didn't know that Avers grew up on a farm. And if Tinsley tells us that he grew up on a farm, I'm in big trouble here because obviously the church, can only grow if you grow up on a farm. And I grew up in New York City. The only thing I got in common with Krieger is my father was a fireman. So, there we are. But I think you're probably right. There are relationships which have gone up, through the years. When Augusta was vacant, down the road from you guys, I served out at Augusta, and you only had to learn about three names because everybody had those names, the same name, brothers, sisters, intermarriages. It was incredible kind of thing. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, please.
The Calling and Caring Ministry by Charles Miller gives clues to this, and he used probably more of the city and suburban setting, is that as the pastor identify where the people are in your community, and it was suggested that when the factory gets out, that the pastor be there. He didn't describe dress, but that you be at the gate of the factory, and you say, hello, I'm pastor from such and such church.
Politician.
And he said that by doing this, the results of people that have brought people into the church. They remember the name, and that someone was there to personally say hello to them. They weren't a number, they weren't a faceless person, they said hi. And you become sensitive to the people who have problems.
What do you think is the weight in terms of the growing church of one, getting them in, okay, which can be done by these kind of methods. In other words, there are methods to get them in. Once you've got them in, then what happens? Okay, you know, how do you prevent backdoor losses? Because it this kind of publicity and the advertising is fine. What I hear Carl saying is that there's got to be some follow-up ministry afterwards. You have to be, you know, if the church is called Shepherd of the Hills, the pastor who's the head of the church ought to be a shepherd.
Yeah, gotcha. And you've got to meet these people. I found, and I think I'm going to use this phrase, I lucked out. I come into an area where the Methodist minister, the Catholic priest, and the UCC pastor, and the Baptist minister, and I'm going to put this very bluntly, they're still on cloud nine. They never did come off. You can come into Herman, and the UCC pastor has been there 15 years, and you can stop any place, and you ask them, who's the pastor of the Lutheran Church? And they say, that's Bess Krieger. You ask them who the pastor of the UCC church is, and they don't know. See what I'm telling you? And I was fortunate. The fact that they don't communicate with the people, so what I did, what they didn't do. And I got among the people, and I'm shaking hands with them. I hunt, I fish. Pastor May's church over there, which has relatives in my area, they have a sausage feed. I go over there and I help them butcher with my bib overalls. I'm part of that party, and they relate to me. And I found by doing this, these people are not afraid to come with a problem and sit down and talk, because I'm on their level. This one lady said to me, she had a problem with her daughter, and she says, you know, and she belongs to the UCC church, she comes to see me because she says, I don't think I can talk to Pastor Elliott. They were actually afraid of him. And that family, I'm going to get. I'm going to steal them.
You're going to steal them. Okay. One more question, and then the bells are about to go off, and I just want to share with you a bit of wisdom from Doberstein. How do you work through the sacraments?
Well, the sacraments goes with the office of the keys, and I'm called. And it's the same as an ordained pastor. See, I'm certified. And so I'm called, and the office of the keys goes with the call.
The inevitable bells have gone off. I'll just speak a little bit louder so you can hear. This is a little piece of poetry from Brewer Maddox, which has some relevance to what we were just talking about. It goes like this. The parish priest of austerity climbed up in a high church steeple to be nearer God, so that he might hand down his word to his people. When the sun was high, when the sun was low, the good man sat unheeding sublunary things. From transcendency was he forever reading, and now and again when he heard the creak of the weather vane a-turning, he closed his eyes and said, of a truth, from God I now am learning. And in sermon script he daily wrote what he thought was sent from heaven, and he dropped this down on his people's heads two times one day in seven. Two services you went to, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
good. In his age God said, come down and die. And he cried out from the steeple, where art thou, Lord? And the Lord replied, down here among my people. Okay.